Thank you for tuning in to this message from Kingdom Heirs International, headquarters located in Flagstaff, Arizona.
Thanks, Eric. Thanks, Dave. All right, you guys. Who's ready for our next portion? You guys ready?
Ready.
Okay. All right. How did Leviticus 24 feel as you were reading and studying this week? Good? Yeah? Any challenges? Anything you're excited to have more understanding of tonight? Yeah? Okay. All right. Well, before we get into Leviticus 24, we're going to go back to last week and go through a couple of the big picture takeaways that we received, or what we've been calling the aspects of the portion that we can apply. Not that we can't apply and shouldn't apply it all, but how do we take what we're learning or what we're receiving and then apply it immediately in our lives so that it doesn't become this, I read, I heard, and I'm moving on without allowing the word to actually transform you, right? So that's the heart behind those big picture concepts, is that there would be things that we immediately could apply as we continue to press in for ourselves each and every portion and what they all mean. Okay, so last week, a handful of things we walked away with. First, we were able to receive a deeper understanding of what it is that we're truly responsible for, just as the priesthood. Because last week, the portion had to do with the holy things that the priesthood is to care for, and why there needs to be a level of separation, or an awareness of separation, between the priest himself and the holy things. Okay? Part of that is because the holy things, whose are they? Simple answer. They're not yours. They're Yahweh's, right? That's something that we miss so often in our daily lives, not just the holy things when we're talking about the holy things within the temple, like the table, like the lampstand. Those are all holy objects that the priests had to steward or care for within the temple, but in our lives, that there are holy things that he says, these are mine, that you are a steward of. Yeah. And what happens when we don't recognize that they're his, and that means we don't recognize that they're holy, is that then we have a tendency to make them common. Mm-hmm. Remember the definition of profane. To profane his name means to make something holy common. So when we don't recognize the things in our lives, like two of the examples that we had last week were marriage, your covenant relationships on earth, or your literal body, which is now the temple, when we don't recognize those kinds of things as holy, then we have a tendency to make them common. And we claim ownership on them when really they belong to him. You are just a steward of what he's asked you to own alongside him.
Yeah.
Yes? Okay. All right, so along with this understanding of what it is that we're responsible for, the holy things, we also have clarity all through Torah, but in the last two chapters that we studied, what it means for his instructions to prevent us from becoming self-serving. That our lives are meant to be about service. We're meant to serve him. But when we don't recognize things as holy, or we don't recognize who the real owner of every aspect of creation is, then we can start to self-serve instead of serve him.
Yes.
Okay. So part of the literal instruction that the priests were given is they had to ensure that they didn't take offerings or sacrifices that were meant to be for him on behalf of others into themselves. That there was an order and there was a way in which they could engage those things, but there was a standard and there was a boundary in what that looked like. And the meaning that we can extract from that is for us to recognize that we could take back what's meant to be offered to him on behalf of ourselves. Yeah. Okay. All right. An aspect of why that is so easy that we also addressed last week, why is it easy to take something that's meant to be given over to him, whether it's our service or it's an offering or it's a sacrifice in your life, why is it so easy for us to take that into ourselves instead of offering it freely? Do you remember what we talked about? Freely was about our free will. We dove in a little bit to the free will offering, and although the free will offering is a type of offering that's specifically described, part of the connection that we were taking is that we are that free will offering. Your will is an offering, meaning it's a choice. To serve him is a choice.
Yeah.
To obey is a choice. To follow is a choice.
Right.
But while we make that choice, we have to wrestle with our own will and recognize that our will wouldn't be possible without him anyway.
Right.
That he's the one who gave you permission to choose to begin with. Why did he give you permission? Instead of just saying, you're gonna do this, and he created you to simply not think outside of yourself, but he wants you to be an active participant.
Yeah.
Right? Why? You can't truly be of service, I'm just repeating last week, you can't ever truly be of service to him if you don't own responsibility for yourself, right? So true responsibility is out of your own will. If it wasn't out of your own will, it wouldn't be true responsibility, and it wouldn't be real relationship. Okay. All of these concepts are why he is Lord and we are not. One of the things that we went over last week is meaning the fact that we have will and sometimes we choose to disobey or we choose to reject or we choose to oppose him, taking what's meant to be his into ourselves, being self-serving instead of serving him or of service to him, all of those, he reminds us, you are my creation and I am the creator. And so in the last two chapters, when he repeats himself over and over again, saying, I am the one who sanctifies, I am Adonai. After he gives an instruction, he reiterates his identity and points us back to his character so that we remember who and how it is that he is Lord, so that we can position ourselves by coming under. So that there's not this, well, I'm a peer, meaning I'm a literal peer with Yahweh. We are not. We are not. At some point, he can give you his power and his authority so that it can be manifested on earth. But the only way that he will trust you with his power and with his authority is if you are fully submitted to him as Lord.
That's good.
Okay. All right. So Yahweh alone sets the objective standard for morality. That's part of what we're learning as well. And what freedom itself truly looks like. We have the tendency to abuse our free will. Do we not?
No.
Yes. All right. As we wrestle out choice, we remember that we were redeemed by covenant unto covenant. It's covenant that is our redemption story, and it's meant to be responded to by covenant. Us upholding the standards of covenant. All right. So before we get into chapter 24, a couple things to preface. We're receiving his instructions. It's what we've been doing for a year and a half, right? We're receiving his instructions on how to maintain that covenant in response to the covenant that redeems us. Yes? All right. His standards are necessary. His instruction is necessary because while we are subject to earth, we want to be able to continue to dwell and stay close. And the very nature of earth means that there is sin and that there is a degree of separation because of that sin.
Yeah.
So what we're trying to obtain is the means by which we can live a lifestyle of continuous dwelling and closeness. All right, so chapter 24, I saw a couple of questions about this on Voxer. Chapter 24 directs us in living a covenant lifestyle daily. In comparison to the last two chapters that we just read, which is speaking to his appointed times and the times where the priests were appointed to meet with him on our behalf, right? On behalf of the people. So part of the movement from the last two chapters into this, which is so powerful, I see it as like a safeguarding, almost like a protection of everything that you just read, to ensure that while you begin to honor things like his appointed times, feasts, and any other time that he says is holy, and he says, I will meet you there. Remember how we talked about it being an appointment?
Yeah.
Where he says, I have this set time, will you meet me?
Right. Yeah.
Outside of those times, we could, just like what happened in religion, we could then say, those are the times that I meet with him, or those are the times that I live a life that is holy. Does that sound familiar?
Yes.
Okay. So holiness itself, which is the path that we're on to obtain, is meant to be a lifestyle, not by appointment only.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So while Yahweh says, I have an appointment for you, I have an appointed time where I want to meet with my people, he is not saying appointment only, but lifestyle, and there are set aside times that I have appointed for you. It's both.
Yes. Yeah.
So chapter 24 is about the lifestyle, which is part of why it can feel so jarring when you start hearing about things like the light and the bread and justice, and you think, what does any of this have to do with anything we've been talking about?
Yeah.
And we're going to get into that. But what it has to do with is, okay, appointed times, lifestyle, this is how. And these are the standards within that lifestyle. Because what we'll see, I'm so excited to get into the blasphemer because I know that that has caused some wrestling. So I'm really excited to get after that. But you'll see that as he directs us in a lifestyle, then we'll recognize that even the sin that's committed is in daily life. We're not talking about something that happens, like it's Yahweh is bringing correction because something happened within the temple or within, you know, during a feast or whatever it might be, but it's in the camp, we'll get to it.
Good.
It's in daily life.
Yeah.
Okay? All right.
Good.
Okay, so the way we're going to do this is the way we've been doing it the last couple of weeks. We're going to go verse by verse in kind of some of the more practical aspects of understanding the portion, and then we are going to extract our big picture concepts for application. All right? Okay. All right. So Leviticus 24, it's going to be very broken down because there's so much in each verse. It's going to be like five words. Stop. Okay. All right. Eternal light and bread. Then Adonai spoke to Moses saying, order B'nai Israel to bring to you pure olive oil, beaten for the light to keep a lamp burning continuously. All right. We have talked about this before in a different teaching, order B'nai Israel. We've heard that commandment before, that it is the people who are meant to supply the oil. Why is that so significant?
Yes.
It is so significant because you are not removed from the responsibility of ensuring that that light or that presence and everything that the light represents, it's not someone else's responsibility.
Yes. Yeah.
In your life, it is not someone else's responsibility to ensure that that burns continuously.
That's good.
Without the people walking out this process of preparing the oil and providing for the light, there would be no light. There would be nothing for the priests to tend to. Okay. So it's really speaking to our role in presenting ourselves as an offering in the midst of press. Does that give you so much encouragement, even in the press in your life of transforming out of your human character and form into His image? That the press that provides that oil out of you is on behalf of something so great and so significant. Okay, this oil has to be pure. Eric said it perfectly. The oil had to be pure, which means it had to be clear of any foreign matter, right? So the more press some of the bits of the olive could break up, and then what would happen if that oil was used is it would create like a, there was a specific word that I read and I wanted to read it. Soot. Soot. That it would create soot within the tabernacle. What was the point of the light? You can answer. What was the point of the light?
To
see, right? For you to be able to see. Okay, so we want pure oil so that there isn't soot and it can be clear. All right, now when it uses the specific word, at least in this translation, translations will have different expressions of what, of the process of preparing the oil to be pure, but the translation that I'm studying says beaten for the light.
Yeah.
Okay, so all it's referring to is a specific technique or a part in the process of pressing the oil so that there would be nothing but oil that's extracted.
Yeah.
So beaten just means the way that the olives are pressed so that the oil can be pure. All right. If the oil is pure, the light is pure. Right. I'm going to get more into the light when we get into the big picture context. All right. To keep a lamp burning continuously or continually. We're only in verse 2. But I promise it's not a sleepover. Okay. So practically, the lampstand was the only source of light in the tabernacle. All right? And what did... Remember when Mom drew that whole diagram of the tabernacle? We could see all of it. I can't do that. But... The lampstand, the light, would shine on the table and the bread so that the priests could perform their duties. All right? So this light is not only practical in use, but it's the very means by which they're able to fulfill their responsibilities. And it also then happens to represent His actual presence in the byproduct of covenant. All right. Okay, a couple of things on the light, but I'm not going to get into it too much until the end. So we all know when Yeshua is referring to Himself as being the light, right? Being the light of the world. Actually, what John 8:12 says is, I am the light of the world. The one who follows me will no longer walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. Has anyone besides me missed that at the very end of that declaration about who he is, that he says, you will have the light of life.
Yeah.
Wow. Right. So if Yeshua is the light, and we can see this representation in the tabernacle of that light continually burning, here's our connection to Torah. Yeshua is the Torah made flesh, correct?
Correct.
Torah is also the light to our feet. It's what is meant to direct our path. I'm not making this up. This is the word. But just following that connection, right, in the word, just as Yeshua is the light because he is Torah. All right. Which is why he's presenting himself as the light of the world and having the light of life. All right. But there's a caveat. He said, the one who follows me.
Right.
What are we learning to become? Followers of what? The way. Whose way? Yes. It's very specific. It's not anyone else's way. All right. Okay. Verse 3. Outside of the curtain of the testimony, in the tent of meeting, Aaron is to keep it in order from evening to morning before Adonai continually. It is to be a statute forever throughout your generations. All right, so we have another kind of, I guess, history lesson or a reminder of what the actual temple looked like in its setup. So this is referring to the literal curtain. You guys remember the curtains that were described that separated the Holy of Holies from the holy place? So the holy place and the most holy place. There's a curtain. We received all of that detail in Exodus, right? So if you needed a refresher this week like I did, because I do not remember mentally those things, I can't really picture them unless I reread, then go back to Exodus, reread, and visualize so that you can really be able to apply. All right. But anyways, so the literal curtain that's separating it, where the Ark of the Covenant was kept with the tablets inside. The holy place was the lampstand and the table for the bread of presence and incense. All right, so that's just describing where things are. Okay, so then in verse 4 where it says he's to keep the lamps in order. So to keep them in order really just means to tend to them, which is a really good word.
Yeah.
So the priests had to tend to the light continuously for it to be a continuous source of light.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So trimming, adding oil, all of the steps that it took, that wasn't their only responsibility, but it was a huge part, because if the light went out, they can't fulfill their other responsibilities.
Yeah.
So, remembering then, just briefly, before we touch on it at the end, that in your life, if you fail to tend to continuously, then you can't wonder or question why the light fades.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
All right. Verses 5-9. All right, we're going to start talking about the bread. Also, you are to take fine flour and bake 12 cakes of it, the 2/10 of an ephah in each cake. Then you are to set them in 2 rows, 6 in a row, on the pure gold table before Adonai. Set pure frankincense on each row as a memorial portion for the bread, an offering by fire to Adonai. Every Yom Shabbat he is to set in order before Adonai continually. It is an everlasting covenant on behalf of Bnei Israel. It belongs to Aaron and his sons, and they are to eat it in a holy place, for it is most holy to him among the offerings of Adonai by fire as a perpetual statute. Okay, so just to describe what's happening or what is to be done. So the table, again, the table that the bread's placed on is opposite it's across from the lampstand. So the light is shining on it. The bread is set out in 2 rows of 6. All right. So we've got 12 loaves. 12 representing Yeah, it's fair to say that that's representing the 12 tribes. Frankincense is placed on each row, and then these loaves were offered as a sacrifice by fire to Yahweh, and then the rest of the loaves the priests ate. So this is a shared interaction where there is a dining together, because you have the bread being eaten by Adonai himself. It's being sacrificed, devoured by fire, as then the priests are eating the bread alongside. So just as we know bread does represent in general, right, life, etc., that this meal is representing our daily covenant relationship. So when we're talking about a daily lifestyle, we've got the light that is meant to burn continually, and we as priests are meant to tend to it, and then we have the bread, which is our communion with him, our daily covenant relationship. So the priests were eating that bread on behalf of the people. It wasn't I have privilege and I'm dining with him, but everything the priests did was on behalf of the nation. Everything they did was on behalf of those who didn't have access. But by their service, then it was as if everyone was having this covenant daily relationship with Yahweh. Yom Shabbat, fresh loaves every Shabbat. All right? Yes, fresh loaves every Shabbat. So Yeshua, as the bread of life, just the continuity of scripture, makes the maintaining of our covenant relationships possible. He's the mediator and the perfect sacrifice. Okay. Does everyone feel pretty good about the light and the bread?
Yeah.
Okay. And we feel like we're carrying the connection to what we're about to move into, because this one's going to take a little bit more time.
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah, I think that feels good.
Okay, so that feels good. We're understanding the connections between why is this all relevant in this order, why after chapters 22 and 23, we've studied the feasts, his appointed times, and now we're talking about light and bread. We understand. Yes? Okay, I just want to make sure before we move into justice, because it's only relevant, it will only be relevant for you if you understand that it is about your lifestyle, okay? And that it is about that continual light, and it is about your daily covenant relationship, mm-hmm. which is the bread. All right. Okay, verses 10 through 16, the blasphemer. All right. So this is about justice and restitution, the whole rest of the chapter. Okay? Okay. All right. I'm going to read it. Now the son of an Israelite woman, whose father was an Egyptian, went out among Bnei Israel, and a fight broke out between the Israelite woman's son and an Israelite man. The Israelite woman's son blasphemed the name and cursed, so they brought him to Moses. His mother's name was Shelomith, the daughter of Dibri of the tribe of Dan. They put him in custody until the will of Adonai could be declared to them. Then Adonai spoke to Moses, saying, "Bring the one who cursed out of the camp, and let all who heard him lay their hands on his head, and have the entire congregation stone him. Then you will speak to Bnei Israel, saying, 'Whoever curses his God will bear his sin. Whoever blasphemes the name of Adonai must surely be put to death. The whole congregation must stone him. The outsider, as well as the native born, when he blasphemes the name, is to be put to death.'" All right, we're going to stop there, and we're going to dive into that. All right. Before we dissect this chapter, I want to put out a disclaimer. All right. I don't want to bring clarity or any sort of definition to any of this portion of scripture for the sake of justifying Yahweh to us. So what I don't want us to do when we dive into this is feel like, yeah, I need his actions justified. So can we get to a place of understanding with one another that will make sense of this? It's okay to not have understanding, but what I want us to move out of is a posture of blaming God for things that we don't understand. Because he's holy and we're not. And he is the standard of morality. You don't. Okay? So we have to put those things on the table if we're going to hear. All right? And it's hard to do. It's hard to do. But we need to. All right. He does not need to justify himself to anyone. And that is not my goal. All right. Just to bring some, but it is to bring understanding. All right. So, so we're talking about routine life. This is in daily life that this is happening. And first, I want to talk through what's in a name. Okay? All right. So what is in a name? In Yahweh's name is his full identity. Fully encompassed identity in every one of his names. His character, his attributes, and his literal manifested presence. When you call on his name, are you not requesting that his presence be manifest? Whether it's in your life, over a situation, whatever it might be, when you call on his name, you are asking for his presence to reveal itself over something, in something, on behalf of something.
Yeah, that's
good. Okay. So, knowing that his name contains his full identity, when you blaspheme a name, this Hebrew word, netzah, is to despise, to spurn, which means to reject with disdain or contempt, to scorn, which is openly reject or make a mockery of, or to speak evil of or vilify. When we vilify something, think of a villain. When you vilify something, your goal is to make others, it's an intentional goal, is to make others think less of whomever you're vilifying. The goal is to destroy someone's reputation. It's to turn them into the enemy, making them appear evil, and blaming or putting blame for evil on them. It also says that he was blasphemed and he was cursed. All right. So this man was using Yahweh's name to curse his name. So this isn't something that we haven't seen. It's something that people would do with deities in general, where they would use a name to curse a name, or they would curse the deity itself. But in this case, he is turning Yahweh into the enemy, making him the evil one, while also using his power, his authority, or attempting to, his manifested presence, just like we talked about, every attribute, every characteristic in his name, to curse him. Does that twisting make sense?
Yep.
It's like if you are trying to If you're cursing someone, you're stepping into a place of authority over whoever or whatever that is. But what authority are you using? Okay, another aspect of this situation that we have to understand is he blasphemed out among the people. The wording is in the camp. Okay, what is the camp? Who's in the camp? Everybody. Okay, where did all these people come from? Okay, they came from Egypt, yes. What were they taken out of?
Slavery.
Under who?
Pharaoh.
Okay, Pharaoh and the Egyptians. All right, so he makes this, he places this curse, or he blasphemes his name in the camp, the very camp that Yahweh established after delivering his people out of a place so that they could again dwell with him. So this is the place where Yahweh chose to dwell once again with a people who were cut off and separated from him. And he is reestablishing in them his culture, his standards, and his very character, everything that his name embodies. They now have permission to glorify his name. They now have permission to come under his name, because his name holds his identity, his characteristics, the fullness of who he is. Okay? Is that picture bringing a little bit more clarity so far as to the grave nature of what's coming out of his mouth?
Yeah.
All right. So we're remembering what they were taken out of and what they're being established in now that they are in a dwelling place, in camp with Yahweh. This man was half Egyptian, which is where they were rescued from a culture that wasn't his, which he's now trying to reestablish among his people.
Yeah.
Which goes back to other rules and regulations that he had made, even about mixing.
Yeah.
Right? Because what are you mixing? Yeah, all of those things, culture, bloodline, who we worship, all of that is coming together. Yahweh said, come.
Yeah.
He didn't deny anyone who said, I will follow. He didn't deny anyone, but he did say, be cautious, and these are my instructions because of what happens when these cultures mix. Okay. One thing that is important to remember while we are trying to grab a hold of this concept of blasphemy and cursing is that Yeshua was also accused of blasphemy.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because this is the humanity aspect of this, meaning the press in our mindsets. All right. So we, in this portion, might question Yahweh's justice, the stoning. We might question his justice. All right. When Yeshua was actually operating in his own name, when he was accused of blasphemy, but we were willing, for the sake of a perspective flip, we were willing to stone him. But when a man who puts on him a false identity and says, you are evil, and truly blasphemes, we say, there's no justice in that. Just a thought. Which brings me to another thought. which is about our concept of justice in general.
Yeah.
Right? So, when we blatantly blaspheme his name as human beings, and death is seen as an unjust punishment, but Yeshua, who operates in the name of Yahweh, and it's not blasphemy, it's his identity, and it's his father's identity, that we don't necessarily have the same connection to.
Yeah.
I mean, we do, but for the sake of going back in religion, which is our role, right?
Yeah.
That is our role as a transitionary people. So our question of what is just or what is unjust also has to do with how common we've made him anyway. In some Orthodox Jew communities, they won't speak his name. You guys know that, right? That in some Jewish communities, more Orthodox, they won't write or speak his name because they consider it so holy. I'm not saying that that's what we should do, but I'm trying to bring some context and some understanding for how far, how much separation there's been, where we don't understand blasphemy or the gravity of blasphemy, that Yahweh would say, this is a matter of death. To mock who I am in front of, in the camp, in front of the nation that I'm trying to reestablish my identity with, think about vulnerability. I mean, even in the journey that we've gone through, how vulnerable it is when you are relearning his character. How vulnerable are you?
Mm-hmm.
It's like one thing and we are offended and we are off and we are, people are having to chase us down, and you know what I mean? Like, it's that. So he's got an entire nation whose hearts he is trying to turn back to the fullness of who he is. And you have someone in the camp saying, this is not who he is, and turning it. Okay. This also is speaking to our what we perceive as our level of authority, meaning when we question what he says is just and what is not, it's speaking to the way that we see him as far as his holiness and the role that we play, because we have a human understanding of life and death that he does not. His concept of life and death is different because he's the creator. So, our belief in a right to life, meaning like I believe that I have a right to life, where does that right come from? Because we can have a right to life that would get us fired up when we read something like this. But who determines your right to live at all?
Yeah.
I mean, that's very foundational. Who determined your existence?
Yeah.
And if that's something you're still wrestling with, start there. Don't accuse him of being unjust if we still are struggling through foundational concepts of what that means. Does that make sense?
Yeah, right.
Because a right to life can also be a sense of entitlement that opposes his authority.
That's good.
Okay, it talks about how everyone who heard laid hands. So this is just an aspect of the community bearing witness to what just happened. It was the community's and is the community's responsibility to uphold his law within that community and on behalf of. Again, talking about vulnerability. How vulnerable is it when you are trying to reacquire the truth about who he is, his identity, his culture, his faithfulness, his goodness, his attributes, and you're having to wrestle through all of these, all the narrative of your past, circumstances, history, so many different things, and in the community, hearts are being turned, and then there's an opposition to that, and it's public. So there is also a necessity for preserving the holiness of the camp itself. Not just preserving the holiness of everyone around who is vulnerable to then having their hearts turned away and to something else, but there's also the holiness of the actual camp. This is his dwelling place. I mean, the tabernacle is where he resides, but the camp, the nation, that is his. So you're in his jurisdiction. He's going to have things to say if within and under that jurisdiction you oppose him publicly. He's going to have things to say. All right, then it goes into whoever curses will bear his sin. All right, so what this is alluding to is, well, let me ask. So what are the means by which our sin, and in Torah, sin itself, is bared or is bore? Sacrifice, offering, yep, and Yeshua, right? All right, so what he's saying is to curse his name is to curse those means. And if we curse those means, then we bear the effect of sin ourselves. Because you're opposing all of the means by which he said, I will bear that sin on your behalf. Or here's a means for the separation that came because of that sin to be restored. There's always a means for restoration. From Genesis to the end, there's always a means for restoration. But when you curse those means, then you bear that on your own. That's not a new revelation. If we don't receive him, we bear it ourselves. So this man is not receiving. He's opposing him. So when the scripture says he'll bear it himself, he will bear his sin. That's what that means. All right. What happens when we bear the effects of sin ourselves? Death. Yeah. Okay. All right, you guys. We're going to move on to verse 19 and 20. Okay, we're still in justice and restitution. Let's see. All right, here we go. Oh, no, verses 17. Sorry, verses 17 through 18. Whoever mortally strikes down any man must surely be put to death. Whoever mortally strikes down an animal is to make restitution, life for life. We're going to stop there. There is an immediate distinction. And we all need to hear that. I need to hear that. As an animal lover, everyone's laughing because you know. But it's true. And that is an aspect of our culture that has shifted. The further away from his standards for morality we become, we are no longer to make a distinction. We're not able to make a distinction between the sanctity and value of life and the sanctity and value of an animal's life. Yes? Okay, so that distinction is off the bat. It's right away. If you strike down a man, the penalty is death. If you strike down an animal, you are to make restitution, life for life. Life for life doesn't mean something has to die because this died. It's a means of making it right. It can be financial. It could be supplying, you know, something that would then meet the need that was lost because animals were productive aspects of the culture and the community. So that's what that restitution looks like. It just means that he is saying that you did strike down a life, an animal, and so you do have to restore it.
Yeah.
All right. So I want to talk a little bit about a little bit more about death versus restitution. So restitution is making amends. It's restoring something to its rightful state. Death is an act that cannot be restored by any human action or any means of financial restitution. There's no measurement. I mean, because your life is freely given, just like when we were talking about who gave you the right to live, who gave you the right to life, Yahweh, the Creator, because of that, life taken cannot be measured by a means of restitution. Which is why the penalty is different than for an animal. Okay, verses 19 through 20. Oh, this one is really good. If anyone injures his neighbor as he has done, the same is to be done to him. Fracture for fracture, eye for eye, tooth for tooth. Just as he has injured someone, so shall it be done to him. How many people, when you read that, are like, vengeance? Yes? How many movies has that been quoted in? How many times have you heard that? An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. You did this, I'm going to do the same. You destroyed my life, I'm going to destroy yours. You took this from me, I'm going to take from you.
Yeah.
Or that condition of our heart, you did this, I'm doing this. That is not what it means. This is not about vengeance. It is about the literal measurement of justice in response to anything that's been unjust. Anything that Yahweh says is unjust has to have a literal measurement in response. Equal measure. So it could look a number of ways. It could be financial. It could be providing something like, I don't know, some sort of tool for maybe the harvesting of crops or the land. But it does not mean if somebody hurt me, I have the right to hurt them in the same manner, same exact way. It's not permission to seek justice on our own. That's the difference. Because Yahweh knows that out of our human emotion and our human reactions, as well as our personal values or our personal, however we would choose to measure something, it's all subjective.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is all subjective, and he does not want us to be the ones that choose. Because if our morality is subjective,
yeah,
or what we think is equal measure is subjective, it's not going to be good. Okay, so those things, there might be a court, essentially like a court system or a hearing, to choose what does it look like for there to be a means of restitution in this situation. That's what that would look like. Which is why we have the law versus taking vengeance into our own hands and whatever that might look like, even if it feels appropriate at the time. There are some things I can think of that I know that I would need to submit the authority that I would want to release restitution out of,
yeah,
to Yahweh.
Yeah.
There are two little girls right here in front that would be a challenge to come under what he says is restitution. But I know that my judgment, my value system would be flawed because it would be out of my human emotion and my lack of understanding of the very nature of justice itself.
Yeah.
So we have his law and we have law. All right. Okay. Verse 22. Well, he reiterates first in verse 21. We already studied it. Whoever kills an animal is to make restitution, but the one who kills a man is to be put to death. Then verse 22. You are to have one standard of justice for the outsider as well as the native born. For I am Adonai, your God. All this means, I say all this means, but it means so much. All this means practically is that the same law applies to foreign residents and natives. Not just Israelites, followed, right? Okay, so same law. What this also means, I hope that when everyone read this, it brought so much clarity and kind of like another one of those moments where we can understand why the Torah is still relevant. Right? Because if we attach ourselves to Yahweh, if we attach ourselves to the God of Israel, have you attached yourself to the God of Israel?
Yes.
If we've attached ourselves to the God of Israel, then Israel's instructions, the instructions we have said are for Israel, those instructions and mandates have to become your own. This is another example of our struggle to want the benefit of being grafted in without being willing to come under what it is that we're actually grafted into. Okay. All right, you guys, that was verse by verse. All right, now we're going to get into some of the big picture points and how we can apply Leviticus 24. Okay, first, it's within the context of our daily lives that we either glorify or profane his name. I'm going to give you a minute because I want everyone to write these down. It is within the context of our daily lives that we either glorify or profane his name. Also, I can send you my notes, Mom. I didn't tell you to bring a notebook. All right. What are the things that he's been after as we've shifted from religion to relationship? Or from that mentality of, I go to church on Sunday, and I don't think about him the rest of the week. Compartmentalization, performance, hiding, hypocrisy. It's what he's always been after.
Right.
Your life sanctified on his behalf. Your life, your daily decisions, your thoughts, your actions, all in submission and service to him. Sure. It's within the context of our daily lives that we either glorify or profane his name. Remember that profane means to make something holy common. So, throughout your day, you can either glorify his name, meaning giving it honor. And by giving it honor, that means that you are walking out his identity. Or you can make your life, which is meant to be holy, you can make it common. That's the distinction between glorifying and profaning.
Can you say that part when you have
time? Yes, I can try. The distinction between glorifying and profaning. You can glorify his name at any point throughout your day, all day, that's the goal, is to honor the fullness of his name by representing his identity. Or you can make your literal life, which is meant to be holy because it's a reflection of him, you can make it common, which is to profane his name. Okay. Our second big picture takeaway from this portion is that light has been redefined. Doesn't it feel like that? Okay. From the concept of being the light in the way that we've understood it, where it's sharing the gospel so that all can be saved, or being a good person, which is subjective, right? How do we know what good is? How do we know what sin is? How do we know what holy is without what he says is holy? And when you don't walk in holiness, you're in sin. Okay? So, being a good person, which is subjective to what it truly means to be a continual source of light. We're a source of life as we manifest how he is. Mm-hmm. We're a source of life, which I'm a, you can put light, but light is life. We're a source of life as we manifest how he is. And when you manifest how he is, you reveal who he is. His character, his holiness, all of that can only be done through an understanding of what both his character is, which means you have to walk in pursuit of holiness. Does that perspective shift make sense? Yep. So when we hear, be the light, how? It's not about sharing the gospel so that everyone can be saved, but it's about being a literal source of life as you submit your life to what he says or how he says you are to live, which will reveal himself. That's how you reveal who he is, because kindness and compassion, those are attributes of who he is, but they are subjective. Meaning anyone can say, this is what kindness looks like. This is what love looks like. You see it all over. We have no fluid concept or understanding of what tolerance, compassion, love, grace, kindness, mercy, justice, truth, any of those things really are. We have no continuity. There's no one standard other than this standard.
Yeah.
Which means that you will only be able to fully reveal who he is by acting like him. Makes sense. Yes, it is. I mean, it's hard, but... So only when covenant is maintained is what I'm saying. Light redefined. Only when covenant is maintained. So just like the example of the oil we were given, just as the oil had to be pure, I think I skipped a part. Just as the oil had to be pure, our purity or our lack of purity as we live in a covenant lifestyle will directly impact the degree of light. If that's your goal, is to be that source. Right? Just like the oil. Just like it needed to be clear, just like it needed to be pure, so that a certain integrity of light could be maintained. It's the same for us. All right, there's only three, so this is our last big picture point. There's one standard of justice. Now, I know myself, so I know that the temptation is when it comes to one standard, we say yes We want there to be one standard when it comes to the blessing and the benefit. Right?
Right.
We don't want there to be a deviation in the standard when it comes down to me and someone else.
Yeah.
Or Gentiles and the Jewish people. We want there to be the same standard. Yes?
Yes.
But we struggle coming under that same standard when it requires something of us or when it comes to the consequences of not coming under that standard. That's when we want there to be a deviation. Right? Well, the blessing applies, but the boundary and the potential consequence shouldn't. That is what we are actively wrestling out. If I hold on to this doctrine, then that would mean that I get this part over here, but I don't have to abide by this over here. And the consequences or the natural repercussions of not obeying our Father, that there is going to be that, we want there to be a deviation in that standard.
Mm-hmm.
But the beautiful thing about there being one standard, it means that you are legitimate. It means that you are legitimately His. It means that He sees you just as He does the nation of Israel. It means that He sees you as His. So we don't want to reject this one standard based on what it requires of us, because this one standard means that you are fully 100%, absolutely no question about it, His. Just like in the Word when it talks about you will know you are His because He brings what? A father who brings discipline, right? That is how you know that you are a son. That is how you know you are a daughter. When there are standards, when there are boundaries, when there are regulations and rules, that is because you are legitimately His. It means you're in His house. You are grafted in as His people. So we just have to keep working out of ourselves whatever it is that pushes back on the standard and only wanting the blessing, because it's like proclaiming that you're still an orphan or you're still not fully owned, which is what none of us want. But then when He says, okay, then I'm going to father you. Yes, I will be your father, and I'm going to follow you just as I do my nation. I'm going to follow you just as I father you, just as I did my people. Well, I don't know if I want to be fathered. But that is His heart's expression over you as a son, as a daughter, and as an heir. So, one standard of justice means you are legitimate. It's a good thing.
It's really good.
That went fast.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
As Megan was talking about restitution, I had this wild thought. And when she was talking about sin and that, I had this thought of how much more would I be aware of myself or myself sinning if the only way to make restitution and restore myself is if I had to give money? Would I sin less?
That's so... Everyone's now you're making us uncomfortable.
Would I sin less? I can't afford to sin right now. Right?
Yes.
I'd be I have goals, I have my savings, I can't touch that. Can't touch my savings. I got plans for that. So no, we're not sinning. This house, we are not sinning. You get your acts together, kids. That's crazy. I thought about that. I'd be Huh. So then it puts value on money.
Yeah.
What is my value then?
Yep.
Who yeah. is my God?
Yeah.
Because if I can put value on money and then that is something I can't afford, which would essentially make me sin less, so then, mm-hmm. so then like, what is my source?
Right?
Right? Which kind of is challenging. At least for me it is. So then like, is money in a bigger place in my life than Yahweh? Because I don't think the same way about my relationship with Yahweh. Like, oh, there's grace.
Yeah.
Right? And so that was something that kind of was like a crazy thought that I didn't want to think about. Because then what if? What if? What if that comes out in like one of our Torah portions? What if I actually have to do that? Anyway, that was a fun thought. One thing that Megan said, she said, we can only reveal who he is by acting like him. And so I had a fun thought about that too. I was thinking, if someone were to follow my, or she also said, we are the source of life, because that was the follow-up. We are a source of life as we manifest how he is, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
So if someone were to follow my finances back to the source, who or what would be revealed?
That's good.
Right? So that's when I had that other thought. And I'm just thinking, these are just interesting concepts. What would be revealed at the end of that source of my money? You know, we've been talking about the last couple of weeks about, you know, is our finances, is our bank accounts a reflection of Yahweh? If we were to look, would it represent Yahweh? And so then thinking again, like, okay, along those lines, we're still in the same place, the same chapters. So then revealing, what would be revealed if I followed back? Like a trail. Like you're looking at your ledger and you're just following your checkbook back to the source of when you got paid, you know, what would be revealed?
Mm-hmm.
So just some fun things to challenge your guys' thoughts as we pass the buck.
Thank you for offering.
Your tithes and your offerings.
I, Megan, just again want to thank you for releasing tonight and for, I don't know how you got through so much in such a short time, because I feel like that was a lot.
It was literally my longest notes out of the last 3 weeks. So
yeah, that was like packed. It was like bam, 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 bam. Like that's how it felt. Just very full and very direct and very rich and potent. So we appreciate you stirring over this word. If you we appreciate the cost in pressing in on our behalf to bring a word to our family for us to be able to glean from and learn from, because it is like life. Like when you're talking about the oil and the level of which that oil has integrity is the how bright, how full the light will be. Mm-hmm. You are a reflection of that tonight in bringing the word, like literally bringing the word to shine a light into all of our hidden spots.
Mm-hmm.
So I want us to not treat this like it was short because it didn't, like that there wasn't a lot. But let it being a short night be a press to, like, that was like port wine. Has anyone ever had port before? I mean, it is almost like drinking syrup. Like, it is so thick and so rich. Like, that's how, let this word be so potent that mom was boxing while you were releasing, and she was highlighting, I mean, but one of the things she said was the last point that Megan made in the big picture about legitimate, that you are legitimate and legitimately his, that will stir things up. And so I wanted to just kind of highlight a couple of things, not that we shouldn't highlight it all, but just as we are letting that oil get into every crevice in its richness, I wanted to highlight something she said at the very beginning, which is not new necessarily, but her saying, holiness is the goal. Mm-hmm. That is where we're headed. Mm-hmm. Because you chose to follow him.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
All of us are welcome to follow him. That is our choice. Mm-hmm. That he's literally opened the way for anyone to follow, especially after Yeshua. We literally have no excuse, right? Like, we chose to follow. So his goal is to make you holy, mm-hmm. which means he's the one who legitimizes. Mm-hmm. So don't profane his name by trying to get him to legitimize something that's not from him.
Yeah, that's good.
Don't bring things that he says are common and try to say they're holy by blaming him because you don't know him.
Yes.
Yeah. You don't know him.
Yeah.
And that is a good thing, because what I have known has been inconsistent, irregular, unpredictable, blame. I'm always in trouble. I don't know what's right. Right. We all have a history. We all have what we thought was. So thank God I didn't know him, because I get to know him now. So when she was pressing us about the posture of blaming him because we don't understand, stop trying to legitimize your life.
Yeah.
And your lifestyle. Let him legitimize.
Yes.
Because he wants you to follow.
Yeah.
This isn't like, I don't really want them, so I'm going to make this as hard or as difficult. He's literally like, just read. Like, just A, B, and C.
Yeah.
And be okay that you're wrong. Mm-hmm. Be okay that you don't know. Mm-hmm. Be okay that there's some things.
Yeah.
That need some soot worked out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we want to be holy. You wouldn't be here if you didn't want to be holy. You literally wouldn't, like... You wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
So then it's not a big deal to, like, deal with the soot. I'm not saying. Yeah. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Where it matters.
Like, letting, like, we want to be legitimate. That has been the cry of our heart. That's what brought you here, is like, God, I want to be a son. Like, I want to be in the house.
Yeah.
I don't want to be afar off. Yeah. I don't want to be outside the fence. Yeah. I don't want to be my own God. I don't want to be away. Mm-hmm. I want to be in the house. I want to be serving. I want to be here. So then letting him really, like, really let it. When we've been talking a lot, for those who aren't on Voxer, or if you haven't been listening, start listening. But if you haven't been listening, we've been talking a lot about him being El Shaddai, being the breasted one that you nurse from, that you literally are chest to chest, that you're getting it all. So don't let him bring the things to the surface that we have been trying to justify. In thinking, well, whatever we've been doing, whatever we've been tolerating, whatever we've been working on, whatever he's been pressing on, that we just keep, like, there's grace. Like, everything Gabriel's just saying, there's grace for that. Like, whatever that is, let's just actually deal with it. so that he can legitimize you, so that he can reconcile you, so that he can be the one, like his standard. And it's okay that we've been in the world. Like you were in the world the last, as old as you are, minus a year or two, you've been in the world. So there's a lot of world.
Yeah.
And there's a lot that we've been talking about that a lot, about the like Grand Canyon of not really realizing how far off our morals are, how far off our character is, and having no idea. Well, we couldn't have any idea because you didn't, but you do now. So don't fight against him reconciling those things.
Mm-hmm.
Because you, if the goal is you want to be holy, then do the work.
Yeah.
To let that, like, happen. So I know it is only, I mean, it's super early, but even if, take time right now. Like, don't miss this. We were just, I mean, you guys all heard me. I testified about how much I missed last week and how much that sucked, because it's like it's here now. It's fresh now, like that healing power of the word, that transaction in a moment is here right now.
Yeah.
Right now to legitimize or to cut off so you can.
Mm-hmm.
So don't miss what we are afforded in the pureness of the oil that she just brought. Like, let's not lose, you know, when like we're saying like death is something that can't be restored. Don't let time go past and lose and not be able to take advantage of what we're afforded in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that means or looks like. I'm just granting permission, of course, to just be present.
Thank you for listening to this message from Kingdom Heirs International. If you have received insight and revelation with this message, we invite you to claim that revelation by trading on the trading floor with this ministry. You can do that at kingdomheirsflag.org. Thank you.